right. Nice. The referee is reaching into their pocket, John. What is it going to be?
Oh,
it's a red card. That can only mean one thing. It's time for the Get Off My Pitch podcast. My name is Eric Paisley, and with me tonight is...
John Brennig.
And on tonight's episode, John and I are going to be breaking down the homecoming game against the Philadelphia Union. We're going to give each other a gut check, talk about the hardest working player, the MVP, and our new section, the uncomfortable truth that must be spoken. And of course, we will tell you who or what needs to get off our pitch. John, it is a pleasure to see you, my friend. How are you doing?
It's good. It was good to see you on Sunday as well.
Yes, it was. It was a beautiful day.
And to see our 30,000 other friends that we may or may not actually know in person.
It truly was an experience, especially since you and I have been around for a while, and to see going from where we came, where we are, just really nice. Are we drinking tonight? So what are we drinking tonight?
We're drinking water because it's late and I'm old. I wussed out on this one.
I'm drinking a little bit of rum, just a little bit, just like with water.
It's
watered
down. It was a little bit of a success. I give you that.
Yeah,
last week you said rum is for winners. We didn't win, but I will.
We didn't lose. Yeah.
We will talk about that.
So, really? John, I know that it's been done to death, but the stadium truly was a party. It was a hoot and a hanny. It was a hoot and a hanny. Honey.
That was clever.
Yeah, so I've been working on that.
If you had intended it.
Yeah, I've been working on that one today. So the atmosphere was outstanding. It was electric. I took some really great photographs. My daughter and I sat in our seats there midfield. It was really good. I want to talk about some of the experience we had there, and I want to hear about your experience in the supporter section, because I think this is going to be interesting now, because you and I have a different experience of the game. We're not just watching it on TV and then commenting on it. You and I actually have a different experience, so this is going to be fun. So let's launch into the gut check. So, John, give me what was your gut reaction to the game?
That was a good game. We started off well. We had some great chances. Mm-hmm. We seemed to do well in possession. There was one right at the beginning of the second half where Philly kind of took control for a little bit, but the rest of the time it felt like, at least to me, one of the things we saw in a couple games, it was very strategic, but it was a game that it looked like we were there to win and mm-hmm. to try to win, which, you know, we talked about there are situations and sometimes Gary chooses. No, we were out there, we were trying to win it, and it went well. So overall, I thought it was great. So I was very pleased, and it was a good effort. It was good to see that out there. So I think it was everything we could, other than actually winning, I think it was everything we could have asked for the product on the pitch to be for that opening match to come home after all that.
Yeah, I think that's well said. It truly was that the boys in gold came out and really tried to give it their all. They really wanted that win. And it was not a half-hearted effort. At the end of the game, everyone was just both sides just sprawled out on the pitch. Not theatrics. Mm-hmm. They were all gassed. It was like, I'm a big fan of boxing. It was like watching two championship middleweights just body blow. It was just relentless the whole game.
Yeah.
And I'm excited to talk about some of the things I observed during the game. But yes, it was electric. It was nervy. There was a tension in the air because we were all waiting for that first goal. Yeah, so it was. And as my daughter, as my daughter commented right after the game, she goes, "Well, that wasn't boring."
No, it was not. Which we could have been accused of at times in the past and in certain games.
Certainly,
it was not.
If you recall that very first game, if think way back at the very first game against Carolina in the Nissan Stadium when we were still in the USL, that was the most boring game of soccer I believe I've ever. The 0-0 draw, that was just, oh my gosh, we had like 60,000 people in the stands. If you remember, it was insane. Mm-hmm. But it was. Even Gary after the match was like, that was not the best example of the beautiful game. that was rough to watch from even a neutral standpoint.
Yeah, it happens.
Yeah, and but that is behind us. What is in front of us is the Geodisc Park. I also want just, and what was your gut reaction to having everyone in the stadium? So what was the feel? What was the vibe over there in the supporter section?
I mean, it was very lively. It was interesting because, so I sat back in the top under the shady area because I had brought, I was going to bring two friends, but one of them couldn't make it, but I brought, you know, a friend with me who hadn't been to a game before. He didn't know soccer.
Oh, wow.
So I brought someone with me who hadn't been and he really enjoyed it, but we stood in the top because it was going to be hot and I didn't want to, you know, didn't know what he kind of wanted to expect. So I kind of wanted to be in the supporter section, but not necessarily in it. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting because you could tell there were some people there who hadn't been to a support section or didn't look like they knew, but they kind of stood along. You saw as the game went on, they got involved in some of the chants. They picked things up. You know, people got into it. Like you could see, you could tell the people who'd been there, the regulars, the people who knew it versus the ones who didn't. But you saw that everyone got enjoyed, especially when we had in the second half, because we were, you know, coming towards the supporters end, we were doing the NSC chants because we had goal kicks or we had set pieces, you know, they were getting into it. Everyone was getting up. And I will say this, I didn't hear it, but I also didn't see people trying to like sit and get down. Cause you know, they have the fold up seats, which were a down position and supposed to be for the games. I didn't see people like looking for that or like looking around like, oh man, there's no place. Like everyone seemed fine with standing the whole game. There seemed to be no complaints. Everyone was happy with it. So it was a great atmosphere from that aspect. I saw a lot of people moving around doing it. Everyone seemed to get involved to help, you know, move the TIFO up. So it was a great atmosphere. It was loud.
Yeah.
It was loud underneath there because I think there was some echo since we were underneath the overhang of the stands above us.
Right.
But it was a great time and it was a great atmosphere. And it was good to see that because, like I said, there are people I could tell definitely hadn't been to a game before and were there and were getting into it and having fun and really enjoying, you know, the product on the field as well as the atmosphere.
Sitting midfield, I know this sounds like a flex, but I mean, I really wanted that midfield experience as close to the field as I could possibly afford. And I'm very fortunate that I'm only five rows back from the actual pitch. So it's amazing. I'm very lucky to have the seats I have right on the midfield line. And it's interesting that the section I had definitely had more veteran people who had supported the club, older, obviously an older set of folks. There was the people in front of us were two dads who had brought all eight, the combined family of eight children. And they all were young men and they all played soccer. They all had either their club, their like maybe their travel league shirt, like they all, and they stood the whole game. They never sat down. All the young men were standing there. They were standing the whole game. I was kind of getting. I got a little annoyed because it sometimes I needed a break myself because I'm old and this, you know, in that sun, because I'm directly in that sun on the TV side. I call it the TV side. It's where the TV broadcast shows. It was hot. It was, you know, but it wasn't terrible. Like we were chatting back and forth. It was not terrible because there was a nice breeze, but I did need a break, and it was tough to see because all these young men were tall, so I couldn't see over them, even with the rake of that lower bowl. But it was definitely infectious. I wanted to build on what you said about the supporter section. It was infectious because as the supporters got more and more excited, it started like people started standing. It kind of radiated from that. You didn't see it, but it kind of started radiating where no one sat down. And then it got to my section midfield and we just, the whole second half, we were all standing. We never sat down because that's
cool.
Yeah. So it was really, so it's interesting how a supporter section, you know, sort of operates, you know, on a pitch in a stadium. And I hope that energy keeps going because everybody was in on the chants. Everyone enjoyed the clapping. It was really a great atmosphere. All right, so let's take care of some very important business, which is crowning our hardest working player. This one was tough for me, but I want to hear your thoughts first. Who was the hardest working player?
I mean, I honestly, you know, you and I both mentioned the last couple of games. We've talked about work rate and things, and it did seem like, and again, another game where everyone was involved, everyone was active. Mm-hmm. Luckily, not the defense was too active because we were, you know, sitting back too much, thankfully. But no, I think everyone was up and active. It was good. I saw some great efforts out there. Again, you know, CJ putting a lot of shift, pushing back, trying to get the ball upfield along with Hani. I would say Dave doing a lot of work running up because we had a lot of, it seemed like we had a lot of throws for a certain period there in the first
his
half.
His arm, I don't know how tired his legs get, but his arms had to be getting tired at some point.
Yeah. Yeah. So it seemed like we were using a lot of Dave there. But no, I mean, to me, I got to give it to Alex because not only is he, we always know usually statistically, and I know I've only seen it anecdotally in some of the matches and the stats. I'm sure we could look it up somewhere. You know, he traditionally covers the most ground. He's always got that energy going. But his efforts, especially the first, there were two opportunities in the first half that he had on goal that were brilliant. It's not that he was just making the effort and putting the runs, because he's always doing that, but it's that they were quality. He had some great quality plays and was in the right position at the right time. I think he was working his butt off out there. I feel like, to me, what I saw was probably the product of stuff they've been working on the training grounds, and I feel like for him it kind of came to fruition this time and worked out there. So I got to hand it to Alex because I think he was doing a great job.
When the first goal was scored by the mm-hmm. Union, Alex was on my side of the field, and mm-hmm. he was walking over, and I saw he had his head down, and his body language was telling me something. And I have to say, I stood up in my seat, and I said, "Hey, Alex, chin up. Get that chin up. We believe. We keep in this fight." And he looked right at me. He clapped and he started like getting everybody up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's the difference in a Nissan Stadium and a Geodis mm-hmm. Park, right mm-hmm. there. Mm-hmm. That one interaction that he and I had. And I mean, I got chills just thinking about it because I was just like, we locked eyes and I'm like, listen, you get your chin up. Like, don't, this isn't over. This is, and everyone right. started clapping with me and, It was a pretty special moment. I gotta say, man, that's my
live for.
That's my special moment of the game because, I mean, so Alex is my hardest working player because he worked his flipping tail mm-hmm. off in that game, mm-hmm. and I never, you know, it's one thing to watch it on TV, John. It's another thing to see those athletes work right in front of you. Like, my mm-hmm. goodness, they take a beating. Soccer is a rough sport. I don't care what anyone says. Like, you see it up close, has some elbows and some kicks, and so yeah, I know that flopping is a thing, but still, it was pretty impressive. And Geodis Park being that close to the pitch, yeah, it was special. And so yes, Alex Moyle, you have earned it. You get the hardest working mm-hmm. player. All right, who's your MVP, John? Who is the most valuable player?
Well, I mean, if I go first, does that mean I get the low-hanging fruit, the easy one?
No. Who you got?
Oh, no. I mean, to me, the obvious answer is Leal because he played well, but the pressure of that situation, this is Philly. This is a team we lost to in penalty kicks where, granted, Leal did not take one, but we... there are so many horrible terms. I can't even describe how bad our penalty situation was in that playoff game. I mean, we missed all of them. It was bad. Going up against one of the best goalies we saw who stood on top of his head in the first half to get some of those blocks. Like, to me, Leal played a great game. He was pivotal. He also was a driving force in a bunch of our attacks. He was moving across the field. Like, I did catch him across at times on the opposite side of the field where he normally was because he was taking the ball up because he was the man on the spot and that was the right run to make. But to step up in that spotlight in that time and to be the guy we needed him to be, it was astounding. He deserves that. That was the perfect thing we needed. So, and I know you'll probably mention, but I know, you know, we listened to Gary's interview after with the whole why it was Leal versus, you know, not Hani.
Interesting comments. Yeah. Talk a little bit more about that.
I'm not going to even try to paraphrase Gary, but what I heard was a lot of coach speak of Hani's working on some things is what he said, whether that means Hani's not satisfied with how he is doing it. Or am I supposed to read between the lines and that's coach speak for I didn't like what he was doing and I've picked someone else? I could not tell. There was nothing, you know what I mean? I couldn't read between those lines because Gary's got a pretty good poker face. At times. There were other times he was laughing at questions.
I don't know about that, but yeah.
But I'm I don't know. I feel like there's a bunch more that could be read into that question, and you could, you know, go off on tangents, but I think clearly it was the right move. It paid off. Leal has always struck me as a guy with confidence. We've talked about, we love his shots. Occasionally he's doing a goalie check from 35 yards out.
It's on frame. It might not be
the best shot. It's on frame, and it's always going to be fast. You know, it's going to have power behind it. And he's always doing those checks, which I kind of appreciate, because you got to keep these guys honest. You know what I mean? Goalkeepers can be caught sleeping. I feel like Leal's got that confidence. He's always got that self-belief. And we've talked about with Hani's spell of not getting goals, it seemed like, is he on the schneid? Is he in his own head? There's all these questions. I think it might be the right move for now, because Leal has never seemed like the guy who wavered in confidence. He gets frustrated. You see it on the field. He will get frustrated, but it's mad because stuff went wrong. He's not out there questioning himself. He's like, someone should have passed that to me. I shot the ball wrong. Like, he knows what's wrong, but he still keeps going and keeps believing. And so in some aspects, that's almost more important than the number of penalties you take or the quality or whatever. It's your belief and the ability to be in that situation, to be in the right headspace. And so it seems like it made a lot of sense.
I'm going to go opposite. I am going to go Dax McCarty, and I'll tell you why. There was a scene after legs were starting to get tired and tempers were – it was hot and tempers were flaring. And Leal goes in with that stupid challenge.
Oh, yeah, the sliding one.
Dax pulled him – like and this is great. Again – the magic of this park is I'm sitting there watching and I can see his mouth like calm. He was literally saying, calm, calm. You got it. He's like, when you cut in, you can't challenge. Like, he was coaching him. That was not one incident. Dax was all over. He was dadding it up. And as a dad, right, I connected with that. So Dax McCarty, I know that doesn't make any sense, but to me, it prevented a yellow card turning into a double yellow. It prevented a fast break turning into a outnumbered chant. It was the kind of leadership that you only get from a player that has played in the league that long, who has been on a big stage, who has opened stadiums, who, like, you know what I mean? He's been there. So, you know, I know it's a bit of a counter, but I feel like Dax McCarty was my MVP. And I obviously I'm biased because I'm there and I'm seeing the scope of what I'm seeing, right, which is all of midfield. But there's a lot. It's interesting. I never realized how much goes on just from Dax's perspective, coaching, like point at shouting, like, get this, go here, move. Like, you really get a good sense of it. Everyone needs to go to a game, and they need to, you know, a live soccer game is definitely very different than watching on TV. So, all right. Yeah. You know what? We're going to talk about it, and we come back. We're going to talk about some uncomfortable truths. Speaking of live, yes, we are going to talk about some uncomfortable truths, and we're also going to tell you who needs to get off our pitch. Don't miss it. This is going to be a good segment. So we'll be right back. And we are back. All right, John. Uncomfortable truth time, and I'll go first because I invented this segment. So here's an uncomfortable truth that needs to be said. The next game is a must-win game. Mm-hmm. I said it. I'm putting it out there. It's a must-win. Several reasons. One is that think about all the things we talked about in this last two segments. What names did we not mention? Walker Zimmerman. CJ.
Walker. Hani.
Hani.
Mm-hmm.
That's uncomfortable, but it's the truth.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Other than one shot, into the goalkeeper's gut, Hani was pretty much just passing the ball. Now, again, maybe that's something he's working on. I don't know. It seemed like he could have been a little more selfish. There was some of that step over, but it was like flashes, like a couple flashes. Walker Zimmerman disappeared. Where did he go? My daughter, who has only watched one half of a year of soccer, said, "We've had 12 corners, Dad. 12. Not one of them has gone to Walker Zimmerman. Not one ball. Let's take a moment and think about that."
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So uncomfortable truth time is that not only do we need to, is the next game a must-win game? It's a must-win game with our stars producing. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
I can see that. And I will say, because even, I know we don't like to single out players, but I do feel like Walker could have done a much better job on that goal that led in, because he did overrun the ball. He wasn't prepared to stop back on that. And he knows he's a better player. We know he's a better player than that. That was, I think it was a preventable goal from that aspect. I mean, yes, it was a great break, but I think he had time with that. And I think he probably knows he just misplayed it. And so I agree. CJ was not meant, was there, but was not mentionable. You know, Tani, I agree that he, you know, was involved in the passing game, but yeah, it didn't seem, I mean, the fact that Mwile had two of our best shots and Dax on one of those great on that rebound, you know, when he shot it off the crossbar, he also had a second rebound later. It just got blocked.
Lovitz had a really good shot that never got mentioned. And
that's great. I want those guys to take shots because they're there to rebound. Cause that's going to happen on set pieces. You're going to get it in. It's going to get cycled out and they're going to get, you know, one timers, which is fine. But the fact that that's all we're talking about for the best shots is a little bit of an indictment of kind of the way our offense is played, and leads to my uncomfortable truth that we got to find some goals.
Yeah.
Like we've always traditionally been get up one, grind it out. We saw it against Columbus. The formula worked. We were down in this game. We caught up. We did see this formula. You know, we saw it replayed at the beginning of last season. It was the first two games we went down two goals each and ended up coming back, you know, which is fine. But that's not – that'll win or tie you games. That won't win you playoff games. That's not a formula to do that. We've got to find some goals. CJ's had a couple. Hani's had a couple. But no one's really been on a form. We haven't had a hot streak. I mean, there was that time in midseason last year, June and July, where we were on fire. We were putting teams down. I look at – and this may be an unfair comparison, but I look at New York NYCFC, FCFC, who was in the CCL and then finally went out. The last three games, I think they've outscored opponents like 10-1.
Yeah.
They've been maybe it's a little higher than that, but still they've been on fire and they've been putting down bad teams. They beat San Jose 3-0, even though it took them to like the 75th minute to drop three on them. We just don't seem to have some of that killer instinct or the ability to put that or pile in the pressure. We've done it before. And to me, the uncomfortable truth is, where does it come from? And I don't know the answer, because CJ could get better and start getting on form, and you know, maybe he gets the right touch, maybe Hani does. I don't know if that's enough. I mean, this formation seems to have done us well in the past couple games, but I don't know if it's enough to do that anymore. You know, it's I don't know. So to me, the uncomfortable truth is, we need to find an answer to have regular goals coming if we're gonna seriously challenge for a playoff spot and not just get to the playoffs, but actually try to win some games. So that's, to me, that's the thing, is we need some goals.
Yeah. The number one team in the East, we had, let's say, 60% of the possession. We took 15 shots, six shots on goal, 413 passes, John. So,
which isn't usually high for us,
and 70% and 80% passing accuracy, and that was because of Hani, because he just knows how to, you know, and 13 corners. Oh my God.
Yeah.
13
That's
corners.
That's a big one. Cause we've hammered on our, sorry.
Go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say, we've hammered on our defending set pieces, but this was a little bit of indictment of our, cause we've scored off, you know, Dave throw-ins. We'd have some good stuff. Maybe that's a little bit of a testament to Philadelphia's defending. You know what I mean? Maybe against other teams, we might get away with. Because remember, they got Elliott, Glesnes,
and they have Bedoya. And Bedoya is...
And they're all tall. They are big boys back there.
Yeah. And they've Bedoya's got veterans. Yeah. They've got, just like us, they have veterans in the midfield who know what the blank they're doing. Like, these are not a bunch of kids.
No, I agree. And so there may be some of that was just, we were facing the best team, what may turn out to be the best team in the East, but... I agree. We got to start finding some gold in manufacturing stuff. You know, so it's just what it is.
All right. Well, speaking of it is what it is, and tackles one, we need to get off our pitch. Who needs to get off our pitch, John? I've got a good one.
No, I'm curious to hear what yours is. Mine, I don't know who actually traced this down to, but mine is whoever was in charge of the game day schedule. Because I don't know if you noticed, you know, they let all the fans in, people were coming in, we get down there, and they're still setting stuff up on the field. They got the players practicing, they come out, the sprinklers are still on. They had the band roll out for the pregame concert we were supposed to have. And the sprinklers were still going, took a while, and then they went away. And then that was out there. They had the people online to run out to run with the big midfield flag for that. Then the band got carted off. I guess we're not having it. Yep. And they came out, they did the anthem. There was a lot of stuff in there that, you know, so we ended up didn't get a pregame concert. I don't know how that happened. We didn't get that. There were a lot of first
and I went in early to go, because I told my daughter, hey, there's going to be a concert. There was no concert to be had.
No, and I don't understand how we didn't have them practice earlier. I don't know if this was – there were some screw-ups there. There were also some other things, like the fact that the TIFO was originally supposed to be one giant TIFO that was going to be raised to the rafters.
I didn't know
they
that.
Out yesterday. So I have there's pictures of it floating around. When they practiced yesterday, it took 20 minutes to get about half height. There were some issues, technical problems. So that cut it. We raised it. You know, people improvise. There's a lot of just first day jitters and stuff that went wrong in the stadium. And again, I don't think there's one person to blame it on. I think that there's probably 1,000 point of failures into this thing. Look, in the end, it was a great game. It was a great experience. I've seen tweets out there. People are like, I went to a game and now I'm a fan for life. I bought season tickets. I'm into this. I get it. Blah, blah, blah. So there's a lot of positive coming out from that. All the coverage seems to be really great. But man, whoever was supposed to make all these things run smoothly behind the scenes, there's a lot of people that drop some balls.
Yeah.
There was a lot of drop balls, and we gotta get better at that. We're a city known for entertainment. We got to know this stuff. So
yeah,
there was a lot of last minute things that didn't come through, and it was disappointing. It wasn't the worst. It didn't ruin it.
No, it didn't ruin it.
But this thing would have been dressed to the nines, just the perfect experience if all that stuff had gone through. So, you know, those people can get off my pitch. It's kind of a soft one, but it was a big disappointment, let down after all this buildup of all this stuff. And then you kind of get hit or miss and things. And like the anthem, you know, it took Judah and the Lion like 5 solid minutes to start playing the stuff after the game. So you're kind of sitting around, you're like, you know, the first thing we do at the end, we have the anthem, the players come over, sitting there, it's kind of awkward silence. The players are milling around because they know they need to stay for it. Like, there was just some execution that was missed, but
yeah,
you know, we'll do better.
Yeah. And also there was a paucity of soccer Moses shots. There was one, they would cut to him for like 5 milliseconds and then cut away. I'm like, come on.
Did you see he did play with Judah and the Lion,
he
though,
did.
For that
concert?
It,
my daughter pointed out, I was, because I'm blind, she goes, oh, Soccer Moses is there. So her and her friend, her best friend, Rachel, are obsessed with Soccer Moses. So I'll be hauling a gaggle of teenage girls to see Soccer Moses at some point. Oh, and a soccer game as well. But they love them some Soccer Moses.
Well,
but I also got her friend a Soccer Moses t-shirt, so.
Oh, that's cool.
Her birthday of last year.
So, yeah. Again, overall, great experience. There was just a lot of stuff that went wrong and some blame to hand out. I'm not going to be.
What about what? But what about the what about other things? What about concessions, food and beverage?
Concessions were good.
Yeah, they were.
I had the empanadas. Loved them. Would recommend. Do it again. Otherwise, concessions were good. There were long lines, but they were serving it pretty good. I will say, when I went to buy empanadas, there was a tech guy there because I think their thing shut down. They like got all the machines rebooted, kept going, you know, cashless. It was a good experience. There were plenty of beer people. They were like, you know, your classic go up and down the stands guy, but they were just set up in the concourse. Easy. It was all pretty easy and quick. So it was all pretty painless. I was very impressed.
Yeah.
Concourses did, surprisingly, as big as they are, they did get packed that like 15 to 20 minutes before the game of everyone coming in and the lines taking up room. That was a little inconvenient, and I think it's probably a symptom of the first game.
Yeah.
Probably not something we'll see regularly, but otherwise that stuff went off without a hitch. I was impressed.
Yeah, that was a win in my book. I went over and I walked around to the other side where where all the nice,
the
well-to-do
seats.
People live. Yeah. And I looked in the restaurant. There's like the little bar restaurant. It was it looked really nice, but they had it roped off. You couldn't go in. But guess who I saw in there is my kilted friend, Gary, like the other guy. Yeah,
oh, the other kilted guy.
He was sitting right there in the window, and I was like waving at him, and he's like, hey. He was sitting all by himself. I felt bad. I was like, I wish I could join you, but I don't have enough money apparently, so I had to walk away.
Exactly.
Those concessions were good. So I took a picture of the band. And I was like, oh, the band's going to play. And Brenda's like, oh, who do you think's going to play? I'm like, I don't know. And even the tech guys, they only had one tech guy working on the field. That poor guy was running his tail. So I should have nominated him for hardest working player because, dude, they only had one guy on the field with the headset and the rig, and he was working his tail off. He was trying to get all the like the flamey things, and they were like his assistants were moving them in the wrong places, and he was like, "No, no, no, you got to move it back." He was like screaming at them. He had, like, I'm like, dude, man, you're gonna, you, I don't know what they're paying you, but you're gonna, you've earned it. But yeah, it, there was no concert to be had. That was kind of a, because I figured like we would have a concert. I thought, oh, it's gonna be cool. There's gonna be somebody. I mean,
there was one at the, so I wait, we got there about 50 minutes before they opened the gates on the north side, because we were, I just wanted to walk around the outside of the stadium and check things out. And there was a concert north on a little stage. They were great. It was a little band.
I saw that.
It was really nice. Yeah. That was good. And I expected something like that on the inside, but you know, whatever. So, anyway, what's got you salty this week?
Well, so I'm sitting midfield and I was sharing with you some of my observations of the VAR setup. I just learned that the VAR and VAR assistant are Kevin Terry Jr., the VAR referee, and Eric Weisbrod is the assistant. And the referee, Chris Penso, has the largest calves of any human being that I have ever... I mean, I don't, they're freakishly large. And I didn't comment on this. No, no, no. You think, oh, this is Eric being salty and he just commented on this. No, 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 my friend. Everyone in the row was like, oh my gosh, that ref's calves are huge. Chris Benso's calves apparently prevent him from seeing second handballs. Okay. So we should have had a second pick. Even the MLS talking heads agree. We should have had a second penalty shot. So my get off the pitch goes to MLSists on Twitter for trashing Harpeth Hall. Let me tell you something right now, John. Reese Witherspoon is a national treasure. Okay? National treasure. She went to my daughter's school, Harpeth Hall. And that is no joke. You don't go around saying Harpeth Hall sucks on Twitter and me just let that slide, okay? So I don't know who you are. I'm looking right at you, MLSist on Twitter, because Twitter's not a real place. You come down here, you say that to my face, okay? Harpeth Hall sucks, okay? I'm not going to have it. I'm not having it. You can get off my pitch. Red card. Get off my pitch. Oh, and referee Chris Benso can also get off my pitch. Oh, and Kevin Terry Jr. and Eric Weisbrod. Yeah, but Kevin seriously, Jr., we got robbed on the second. We got robbed on that. I watched it. And that was one of the things, like, so during the actual match, none of us knew in the midfield what was going on. We had no clue what was going on.
No one in the supporter section knew what they were doing. Some people said maybe there was a handball, but we had no clue. All of a sudden, the ref's going over there. And we're like, what's going on? Like, it was a bang-bang play. And some people had caught it or whatever, but I mean, it was like the first one, every Nashville player hand went up. Everyone saw that first handball. I was like, guys, come on. And then you saw the ref blew the play dead right away. The second one, he let play go on, but I didn't even see a lot of complaints there, 'cause I think it was just so quick, but yeah.
Well, anyway, we'll talk more about handballs and red cards in our next segment. No, we won't. Now we're going to probably wrap this up, John. So, stay with us. We're going to next talk about, our upcoming match and the scoreline. Again, I've already put my marker down, and we'll talk about what we got wrong. So stay with us. And we are back. All right, John, let's take this podcast home/live stream. Okay, who are we playing and where are we playing?
Well, we will be home again next Sunday, so it's not a Saturday game, still a Sunday game. We're playing Real Salt Lake again at Geodis Park, so that should be interesting. This is, I found it interesting because it's only the 10th game of the season, so we're, you know, less than a third of the way there. We're already playing a team we played again. This is the last time we see them. Now, they're currently sitting fifth in the West, so this could be a team that we could possibly place in the face in the playoffs. I can't speak anymore. And yet we would have played them the last day, you know, like first week in May, and then not see them again for the rest of the year. Like, it just feels weird that the games are so close at the beginning of the year. Anyway. So a team we've already played and we lost 2-1.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that there's a little bit of payback, I think, in store here. And I have a 2-1 score. I'm just going to come out and say it. I have a 2-1 score line again. And if honestly, actually, I would have been somewhat right if one of the two chance goals had gone in. We would have been talking. We've been sitting here talking about a 2-1 goal, right? A 2-1 win. I think there's going to be another 2-1 game here, John. I'm doubling down on my assertion and my uncomfortable truth. This is a must-win game. If we're serious about being in the playoffs in the West, we have to beat San Jose. We have to beat Real Salt Lake, San Jose. We have to beat them too, but we have to beat Real Salt Lake before we beat San Jose.
So I'm going to hit you with some things about the last game. So we lost 2-1. We outshot them almost three expected goals to one. If you remember, this was a game we got lucky. This was the game where Zach McMath stood on his head in goal.
Oh, my gosh.
And we outshot them 16-10. But this was the game where David Ochoa, their normal goalie, was out. And Zach McMath, just remember, every shot just like magically got sucked into his gut. This was that game. We dominated that game. We had 59% of the possession. We did well. If we play anything like we did in Salt Lake here, this is a 3-0 win. This is, you know what I mean? The home luck, this is the way it goes. If we play anything like that, I'm going to go with 3-0 win. If we play the same aggression, the same team, we push these guys. We outshot them, and we did that at home. I mean, you saw it. It looked like we were trying to claw our way back and win this game. This wasn't a sit-back passive game. I know it's been a while, but this was a game we looked good in. You know, this was at the very beginning of the season, one of those like, oh, man, you know, coming off the Seattle game going into this. This was after the Dallas loss. This was our bounce-back game, or supposed to be our bounce-back game.
It was supposed to be, yeah.
It was supposed to be, and it should have been. The stats say it just, you know, sometimes the results don't match that. So I'm going to go with 3-0 win because I think we're going to go big, and this could, again, I agree with you. It is a must-win game, and I think if we can do this emphatically, this could be the thing that hopefully starts the ball rolling with, you know, playing better, getting the goals, getting things, and starting to put, you know, beat the teams in the middle of the table and the bottom of the table solidly, and then, you know, play well against like the Galaxy. Sure, we lost, but we played really well against them for part of it. But, you know, play well against the top of the table, but beat the teams that we should beat to start racking up those points and actually put us in a playoff position.
Call me
optimistic. I'm going 3-0.
This is, again, I'm tripling down. This is a game we should win on paper, in spirit, in whatever realm or position you want to take. We should win this game. So yeah. I'm going to say 2-1 because I feel like there's still, and it was clear from watching Alex Mouille and Rondell Leal's post-game interview, the players feel the pressure of a new stadium. This is not like, they're not robots, right? They understand that there's a lot of emotion. There's pressure on them. And maybe that was part of Zimmerman's problem. Maybe that was part of like that's what I said in my earlier segments. Like there was some nerve. You could feel it. There's some nerves, right? There was some nerves. I don't know what's going to break that. I feel like a win is also necessary to kind of break those nerves, kind of just let's break through the ice or whatever anxiety is surrounding the new stadium and the new digs and break that down and just take San Jose to the woodshed. Just I'm not San Jose. God.
Salt Lake.
Take Salt Lake to the woodshed and just beat the snot out of them. We just need to have one good whooping, and that'll
– we need to have a classic FC Cincy game where we just beat the pants off of them, feel good, and we celebrate. And it's, you know, and
we're just racking up goals. And Hami's just doing step over. He's just doing step overs for the fun of it, right? He's like, beep, 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 you know?
Exactly. No, we do need that because it is. The team does. It feels like and I get it for this game because you know there's a lot of pressure on them. They knew. They not only were they going to try to win, but they knew they could not lose this first game. Like that would be a huge letdown after the streak of not losing at home, and the new park and to christen it with a loss would have been just utter devastating. So I think they knew that. I'm hoping that this one we come out with a little more swerve, a little more attitude, and we go out and put a stamp on the game as opposed to just playing the game and maybe they can get that, get a little more joy back in it and do that. And we could go on a run this month. So it could be very interesting.
All right.
Especially because we got a lot of games this month.
We do. And so we got to, let's wrap this up so we can move on. So, all right, John, what did we get wrong in the last episode? Speaking of.
I did not have much other than I did. We were talking about the guy who, you know, viciously headbutted Daniel Lovitz. I said Acosta, which is not great. It was Efrain Alvarez. I don't know if I'm having flashbacks to since.
Yeah, I like your note here. Acosta says he tried to decapitate Dan Lovitz. That's yeah.
A little bit of color.
That's a little bit of a color commentary, but I will allow it. I will allow it. All right. Well, John, I gotta say I'm glad we recorded this tonight because last night I was.
I couldn't talk.
I was hoarse. Yeah. Anyway, so
I couldn't talk. I was physically tired from standing and walking. Because I mean, that is one thing. Tailgating and all that stuff is fun, but the opening it 4 hours early, trying to get there as early as possible, and do all the things. It was a long day.
It was a long day.
It was worth it.
Well, we will talk about the next game next Monday night because we're going to have another late day, and I'll be at the game. And so it's Mother's Day too, so I'll probably be taking my wife to the game instead of my daughter. So. Mm-hmm. John, it was a pleasure, my friend. Always, always a fun time to talk.
It was good, man. We'll talk again next week and hopefully with some coming off a beautiful win.
See you then.
Talk to you.